Hello, welcome to Jibe Talking from the Volvo Ocean Race on Shore Talk. This week it's all about the America's Cup. We have reaction from both camps. BMW Oracle CEO Russell Coutts looks into his crystal ball for the future of the event, and we wrap up the whole thing with Matt Sheehan as he considers events in Valencia and has a guess about AC34. And we also pop down under to hear about the up-and-coming match races at the Warren Jones Youth Regatta. But first, as always, it's the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. On their Jules Verne challenge, Frank Camas and the Group Armour 3 crew are struggling to match Orange 2's record-breaking performance. They're behind the clock in the Indian Ocean. Nine teams, headed by champion Adam Minoprio and Black Watch, have received tour cards for the 2010 World Match Racing Tour, guaranteeing them invitations to nearly all events. Michael Coxon heads in the 18-foot skiffs, JJ Giltinen Championships after four rounds in Sydney Harbour. The man behind the Vestas sail rocket, Bernard Smith, has passed away at the age of 100 exactly. Oh, and BMW Oracle won the America's Cup. Well, they're going to dominate the programme, but not necessarily the headlines. So the America's Cup is heading home after its sojourn in Switzerland and the Southern Hemisphere. Here's the reaction from both camps, starting with the winners, BMW Oracle and Larry Ellison.
I'd like to assure everybody about the 34th America's Cup. Is that there will be a completely independent jury. There will be completely independent umpires. It will be an independent group that manages the next America's Cup. And it will be a level playing field for all competitors.
If we could go two rows back now, please.
Are you going to drop the lawsuit? You know, the only thing we ever wanted was to meet Alinghi on the water with a fair set of rules, and that's what we got. And we're extremely happy today.
Thank you.
We just asked Alinghi previously what Golden Gate Yacht Club and BMW Oracle Racing would have to do to get them to want to be involved in the next cup. Aside from saying stop the lawsuits, they said that after the multi-hulls, they thought that going back to something like the version 5 boats would be a step back. Do you guys have an idea of what you would like to see the next cup in? And would you like to see Alinghi there as a challenger?
Well, you know, of course we'd like to see Alinghi there as a challenger. One of the best teams in this business, and it's proven that over the last, since they won in 2003. I think the type of boats... We should reach consensus with the rest of the America's Cup world. You know, I think it'd be irresponsible for one party to try and make a decision on behalf of everyone else. We have to put a lot of thought into these sort of decisions, because this is a 159-year-old trophy that we must look after it.
Question for America. Larry, when we were making a program in San Diego recently, Dennis Conner came to see us, and with Dennis Conner came a crowd, a huge name in the United States. But it seems the America's Cup has gone quiet in the USA. Is it a determination and a passion of yours to bring that trophy, the sort of profile it once enjoyed in the United States?
Well, I think, again, as far as I know, and what I've been told in terms of web hits, I'm a bit of a techie, that this particular America's Cup garnered an awful lot of interest because for the first time in a long time, it featured the two fastest sailboats in the world. And the limits of what's possible marrying high-speed sailing and you know, material science, I mean, carbon fiber, Kevlar, computational fluid dynamics, you know, computer simulating are not only our hulls, but also our wing. It was really a high-tech race. And a bunch of people that really aren't that interested in sailing follow this race pretty closely. And we think that's important for our sport, that it attracts a lot of viewership. So we think that's very important. that we get good television coverage, we get a lot of people involved in the sport, a lot of the sailors and a lot of the non-sailors following the sport, and we're going to try to make decisions along with the rest of the America's Cup community to do just that, so we can attract sponsorship and funding for all of the teams that want to participate, from BMW and Oracle and Alinghi, but also to the Chinese team and the South African team and the Swedish team and the New Zealand team. If we do our job well and work closely with them, it should be the most popular America's Cup ever, the 34th America's Cup.
Now it's the turn of Alinghi and Ernesto Bertarelli.
Well, congratulations to the BMW Oracle team. The boat was faster, there's no question, especially on that reach. They gained quite a bit. We felt better on the second part of the reach when we jibed. We caught up a bit. But, you know, they had a strategy. They got a little help from the legal system in New York. That always makes things difficult for us European to get the same sort of advantages. So, you know, they were able to change their boat when they saw ours. They were able to bring a wing, and they were faster. So, you know, good on them. Maybe I wouldn't have done the same thing, but, you know, that's the America's Cup. It's not the European Cup. It's the America's Cup. So the Americans have a bit of an advantage, and they take the cup back home. Let's see what happens now.
Ernesto, are you saying that you think that the American court system favored Larry Ellison and that therefore he was able to win as a result of some hometown favoritism? Is that what you're saying?
No, that's what you're saying.
No, I'm asking you that you said that he had an advantage that a European doesn't have. Could you explain that a little?
No, that's what you said. You were here when I said what I said. I just said it's the America's Cup. And it's very difficult for a European to win. That's why I'm particularly proud of Alinghi, having won the cup twice and have been in a position to defend it. We did everything we could, but we never went to court unless we were forced to.
Do you have a final judgment on Larry Ellison as a competitor?
You only led one question.
No, I. If he comes, you know, I'll shake his hand and wish him good luck for the future. I just hope that he's going to drop his legal cases, because there are still a few pending. If he does so, then we'll do the same. So good on him. Good victory. Well done, Larry. Well done, Russell. But again, I think that, you know, the greatest achievement of Alinghi is being the first European team to win the America's Cup.
Having won the America's Cup 2003, and today it slips away, when you win the America's Cup, when you look back on that period, what do you reflect on as the most significant moment? You try so hard to win it and you get it. What does it bring?
Well, you hope, if you win the America's Cup, you hope you're not going to be sued.
Andy Green from America's Cup TV. Ernesto, you've seen the highs and lows of the America's Cup. Would you recommend this adventure to anyone else?
Yeah, I would. And certainly if anyone wants to try it. You know, I'm not the sort of guy that pretends to give some advice, but maybe they should study our path, our 10-year, what we did and what we didn't, and learn from it. There's a few things which, from hindsight, I could have done differently, but overall, I think it's pretty good run. No regrets, really.
What would Golden Gate Yacht Club and the BMW Oracle Racing Team have to do to get you guys and Alinghi to want to be involved in the next edition of the America's Cup?
Stop suing us.
We'll throw the lawsuit as a starter. And I mean, certainly for us, with the investment we've made in the multi-hull, be easier for us to either stay with the multi-hull or go back to the version 5. Anything in between is a new beginning.
Once the dust had settled, Russell Coutts, CEO of BMW Oracle, told Matt Sheehan, amongst others, how he saw the AC panning out now.
I still fundamentally disagree with the Defender Racing and the Challenger selection. This is just my personal view. But what I really disagree with there was them scoring points in the Challenger selection, but having no risk for themselves. I think that was wrong. And I'm still prepared to go on the record and repeat what I said back then, you know. But I'll take it a step further and say, you know, I mean, I committed us today to that, and we've already discussed that particular thing internally. We would not race in the Challenger Selection Series. We would have our own defence trials. It may be, you know, I wouldn't rule out another club from the States coming in and racing us. It's happened before, and so maybe you get around the two-boat thing with you know, if you have another team and or teams from the States racing the defence trials.
You would not rule out that.
Then you don't need your. But you're right. If there's no other teams and we need to guard against that, then maybe you have to allow all the teams to build two boats. Yeah. You know, that's actually not a big cost, by the way. A lot was spoken about cost. Two boat testing is a big cost, and this is all to be discussed with the teams, right? But if, for example, if you put blackout periods on the sailing, you'd save a lot more cost than you would by one boat. You know, and this campaign was an example. You had one boat out there, still every day, and all that you did was spent more money on technology developing it. So I'm not sure that alone, by only building one boat, reduces cost. And don't forget, under the old rule, you could build one boat and then you could heavily modify it. You could effectively chop it. So it wasn't really a one-boat campaign. And if you really dug into the cost, I'm absolutely convinced it was not saving money. You know, so those sort of things need to be debated and discussed properly before you go making a decision. You know, and the Defender Racing and the Challenger situation is an example of, do we really want that? Or does it compromise the event? And I'd suggest it does. You know, one of the magic parts of this event was nobody really knew who was going to win when the votes lined up.
The first 10 minutes.
Yeah, we did.
20 minutes, let's say.
Nobody really knew who was going to win, and that's been the same for... Everyone's got their favourites, or they think they might know who's going to win, but you don't really know because the votes haven't lined up before, and there is something about that.
How does that position where you say, and I can fully understand what you're saying, but how does that square with the WSTA and the Louis Vuitton Trophy? Because you're stakeholders now.
Yeah, we're going to have to speak to them. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could do in common, or maybe even allow them to take over certain aspects, or an organisation like that. That's an example of the sort of things you could think through and decide. For example, the pre-regattas, what status should they have? Where? What sort of place? How should they support the teams? Should teams have the right to host the pre-regatta? For example, because that may that seem, look at a team New Zealand, that's critical for them. So that may be a good enough reason to do it, because if it supports the teams in doing it, same with the UK, you may say, well, it's absolutely critical that we have one event in Cowes because it's going to support the UK team. Those are the sort of decisions that you need to make smart, not just for a one-off monetary fee. But you actually look at the thing in a grand scale and you say, okay, how do we put the best organisation in place that's going to support the thing properly, rather than, divvying up the money afterwards and perhaps not really helping. You're making decisions commercially in isolation of what the teams might want commercially.
Are you going to continue with the court case in New York over the breach of fiduciary duty?
We wanted this resolved on the water, a lot of those arguments were to get fair rules on the water. So now that it's been decided on the water, I think we can put the past behind us.
Okay, so all the cases are going to...
Well, it's really Larry's call on that. Right.
But that's what you'd be advising him to do. You'd be saying, let's draw a line under this.
Yeah, I think,
I think we've resolved most of it. There are some important issues to be fleshed out with the breach of fiduciary duty claim, but maybe they can be done in other ways. I don't really know. Yeah. But that's an important consideration for the sport going forward. Some of those issues that are in there, you know, we need to really clarify what can be done going forward, you know, so you don't have a repeat, you know, and that could be a way to, there could be ways to solve that outside of the courts, but you may need to get direction from the courts as well.
Is there a chance you can keep the cost too far down so that the event loses its luster?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that actually said that grandness of these sort of blokes was one of them. That's why I don't think we need to rush these decisions, you know. We need to really consider it carefully and do what's best for the sport and the cup going forward. Because, you know, what I have is an idea of a really competitive match race, you know, close racing and that sort of thing, may not be supported by other people, you know. This was cool, I've got to tell you that, from my perspective.
Well, we've popped over now to Yachting World and technical editor Matt Sheehan, who was out in Valencia for the much-anticipated America's Cup. Millions spent in court costs, millions spent on developing these incredible catamarans, trimarans, whatever. Was it worth it?
I think it was. It was, but it went with such a flash. It was always on the cards that with a best of three series and some very tight wind limits, that two things would happen. One, we'd be sitting around for quite some time and there would be a lot of frustration, and there was. Two, when it happened, it would be almost over before you'd even know it started, and that's exactly what happened. We waited for quite a long time. It felt like a long time. It actually wasn't that long compared to some of the delays that we've had in previous cups, but it felt agonising. This is my third cup, and they've all been very, very different indeed, and this one was very different. So, no, it was worth the wait.
Now, the one thing sitting from outside is you could see the you could almost feel the atmosphere, even on TV, what have you. The one thing I think one or two people have expressed, was it a real sporting event? It was definitely an event, but in the end, apart from the start of the first race, the race to the first mark and the second, it was a bit one-sided.
Well, it was, but, I mean, you said it all there, Guy. I mean, for the first 40 seconds of the first race, it was certainly a sporting event. No one had anticipated that there would be a dust-up in the way that there was, a head-to-head and a penalty planted on the defender within 40 seconds. Not even the umpires thought that. By the time Oracle gets across the line cleanly, Alinghi is 600 metres ahead. I mean, that would be done and dusted in a normal, if there is such a thing, America's Cup. And then 15 minutes later, and ironic that they always talk about the first 15 minutes will tell you who's going to win the America's Cup. Well, at 15 minutes, BMW Oracle took the lead, and she never gave it back. Now, that was 15 minutes of excitement that had left most of the media centre completely breathless. I'm sure the same was true with those watching it online or on the telly. But as you say, after that, it was a very one-sided battle. So much so that by the end of that race, people were just saying, well, that's it, isn't it? It's all over. It's going to be Oracle. But of course, we found out that wasn't going to be the case later on.
Well, BMW Oracle did win 2-0. They are now the winners of the America's Cup, the holders. What does this mean for the future of the event?
Well, it certainly means that there's going to be plenty more speculation, that's for sure. On the face of it, you'd think that the Cup was heading over to the States, which it is. It's heading over to the States. But where is it going to go from there? Well, the location of the Cup is something that's probably there's probably least known about at the moment. The way it looks like shaping up, and at the moment nothing formal has been announced other than the challenger of record, which will be represented by the Italian Mascalzone Latino team. But apart from that, they've got to work together and figure out what the structure is going to be. But there are things that you can take out of this cup when you look, stand back a little bit and look at what else has been going on. It seems likely that there will be a challenger series that will travel around the world in much the way that the acts were around Europe for the 32nd America's Cup. And it would seem sensible that the WSTA, the World Sailing Teams Association, that run the Louis Vuitton series, which has just been got going just recently, it would seem sensible that that could form part of the new Challenger circuit. And this year they have events in the old-fashioned version 5 America's Cup boats. The first one kicks off in Auckland in a few weeks' time. Then the other events are in Sardinia, Dubai and Hong Kong this year. So that would give a sponsor lots of exposure. It would bring in teams on a global scale, and it's a setup that's already in place. So that seems sensible. Then the next stage is more of a sort of is more and more on the speculation side, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if we found that when the cup happens, and that looks like it couldn't really be any earlier than 2013. If it was going to be in 2013, then why not make the Challenger Selection Series actually happen during its trip around the world, so that when you get to 2013, instead of having to build bases for, let's say, 10 teams, I mean, the space that needs is enormous. Instead of having to do that, maybe you whittle down the teams and have, let's say, 4 finalists that you select in 2012, so that when you get to 2013, then you have 2 or 3 weeks of Challenger Series to find the final challenger, and then you have the America's Cup. It's only a theory at present, but it's one that I think quite a few people are looking towards.
Multi-hull or monohull?
A few weeks ago, I would have said monohull, no question. Now, I'm really not so sure. I mean, the multi-hulls did look spectacular. They couldn't be that big, but, wow, it's whetted quite a few people's appetite. The big problem is where on earth do you put them, because they take up so much space.
Will Alinghi be back?
These are tricky questions, aren't they, guys? A few days ago, I would have said no. Reading some of the stuff I've read recently about various reports, maybe.
Finally, it's off to Western Australia. Adam Minoprio's won it, so has Tor Varmiski, and now Kiwi William Tiller has won the Warren Jones Youth Regatta, stepping up from Phil Robertson's crew to helm his own boat and turn the tables on his former skipper. He's talking to John Robertson.
It's awesome to step up into the skippering position and take it on and do so well, really. It's awesome just organising the team and getting everything sorted. Been hard, but it's been worth it.
You obviously like the boats that it sailed in, and the competition has been hot all the way through.
Yeah, we love the boats. They're awesome match racing boats, and it's awesome to sail. And yeah, the competition's been great. We've been pushed all the way.
So, and now obviously in the final, you were up against your former skipper. Was there a bit of needle going on there?
Oh, not really. It's a bit of a heated rivalry at the moment between the two. But it's good to try and get one over them.
I mean, you were here last year, you won it with Phil last year, but your name didn't go on the trophy last year, did it? This year, your name will go on the trophy. At what stage did you decide to go and create your own team?
Well, we've been members of the Royal Lion Foundation Youth Training Program, and we've all come through that, and as Phil and Garth, they got too old and they moved on, you know, we kind of just stepped up from, like, I was doing main for Garth, then I stepped into the skippering position, and I just stayed in youth program for another couple of years. Did a lot of the younger regattas, like under 20, under 21 youth regattas, helming, and I know I've just developed a passion for steering, and yeah.
And how difficult was it when you create a team to go out and find guys who will sail with you, who've got faith in you to do well?
Well, I guess I've been quite lucky. Like, there's a lot of guys in the youth program at the moment which are all good at their positions, and I've managed to gel and mould everyone together, and we've all fit well together, and we get along well, and I think that's quite important. And yeah, I've just been fortunate, really, it's all sort of fallen into place with the right guys.
Well, that's it for this week. Please join us again next time when we'll have all the latest from the world of sailing. And remember to tune in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.org.